yourself a pen and paper. It's time to get started. I'm Russell Westcott, your host, and you are tuned into the latest edition of Real Estate Investing in Canada interview series. Seems like everyone I talk to has or is thinking about buying a property in the U.S. There are many people jumping on this bandwagon, and they are getting very bad advice. Investing in the U.S. isn't for everyone, but if you're thinking about diversifying your portfolio, this interview will help provide you with the right information and direction to do it without the painful lessons. The intention of this call today is to help educate you if you're jumping onto the U.S. market. And I'm going to very soon introduce you to one of the top lawyers helping Canadians successfully navigate through the cross-border quagmire. My guest today is a highly respected lawyer from Toronto. He is the chief legal counsel, specialist in due diligence for the U.S. Property Shop, and is the chairman of the Life Rich Corporation. My guest today has been practicing law for over three decades. He knows his stuff, and he specializes in securities, mortgages, tax, and real estate, overseeing and transacting millions of dollars in real estate. Please help welcome to the call David Franklin. David, welcome, and how are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you, Russell. It's actually a very nice day in Toronto.
So I was just going to ask you, where do you hang your hat when you're not transacting all these millions of dollars in real estate?
Well, I'm a native-born Torontonian.
Well, that's very good.
Yes.
So why, you know, I'm going to get right to the point here, David. Hope you don't mind.
No, not at all.
Why do we need to listen to you? Why are you an expert in helping Canadians buy properties in the U.S.? And maybe give a little bit of a background for people that aren't familiar with you, and maybe give a scope of how many properties you have transacted.
I was called to the bar in Ontario in 1973, so you'll have an idea of how long I've been practicing. And I've been involved in real estate, securities, tax, mortgage lending for many years. And we've done transactions as well in the United States. And what happens is the United States is a different market than the local market you're used to. I mean, for us people in Ontario, Toronto, we know the rules of our province. In British Columbia, they have their set of rules. Calgary, you're buying their set of rules for Alberta. The same thing applies when you go to the States. Every state has different sets of laws and rules and regulations. So you've got to be knowledgeable in the legal aspects when you transact in any state, just as you do in Canada, actually.
So are the differences between states in the U.S. that significant that you need to have experts and homegrown experts in each area?
Actually, you do, because one of the things that happens is if you go down and you want to buy a property for investment, say for investment purposes, what happens is you go to a lawyer in any one of the states, and the automatic thing they'll tell you is you want to incorporate an LLC, a limited liability corporation. And they do that because that's what all the Americans do, because it's a pass-through. In other words, you have limited liability, and the income flows through the individual. That's why they use it in the United States. There's one problem with them, and that is they're not recognized for Canadian tax purposes. So what you have is double taxation. You pay tax in the States because your company is there, and the tax you pay in the States is not credited back against your tax in Canada.
Okay, that makes sense. So what? So maybe just let me back up a second here about, so what should we have for legal representation? Should I have a lawyer in the States? Should I have a lawyer in Canada, or should I have both?
Well, you need actually both, because what happens is you want some Canadian advice on Canadian aspects of the transaction as well, but only an American lawyer can practice American law.
Okay. So and with all due respect to my guest today, when I hear that I need two lawyers, does that raise the cost and expenses of all these kind of transactions?
What happens is the advice you need from the Canadian lawyer is to review your contracts, review the agreements, because notwithstanding you got, say, a Florida and Arizona standard real estate board form, what happens is they're basically the same as here. And you put all the extra clauses that you want for your protection in the offer. Now, what I always tell people is, and most people don't realize this, once you have signed the agreement of purchase and sale, most people do that first and then go to the lawyer. It's too late. at that point, the lawyer can only act on the agreement you've done. What you want actually is advice before you do it, so you become knowledgeable enough yourself that you don't need his advice on the next transaction.
Very good advice. That's things that we train our members all the time to do. And I was just actually joking a little bit about the expense. I know any type of advice I get from a lawyer is worth its weight in gold. And if you don't mind me asking a personal question, before you were in private practice, what did you typically charge per hour for consultation?
It was $500 an hour.
$500 an hour. So that can give everybody who's going to be listening to this call some indication of the amount of value we're going to get listening to this call. So you can put the bill in, put your invoice in the mail to me.
Thank you very much. Let me just add one other thing. I told you about the LLC, which you can't use. They mm-hmm. have a new creation in the States, not in all states, though, naturally, called a limited liability, limited partnership.
And I've heard that is the best structure to set up to purchase across the states, and if you're purchasing cross borders.
That could be. The difference between that and the normal limited partnership is that in a limited partnership, you have a general partner who has unlimited liability, and the limited partners who have limited liability. What happens under the LLLP, what happens there is the general partner also has limited liability. So actually, you can still use a limited partnership because you get all the flow-through benefits, but the difference is, normally we do a limited partnership, we create a shell company as the general partner. So even if there is any liability, it doesn't really have any effect from a financial point of view.
Okay. So I imagine you've, how long have you been helping Canadians cross-border purchase now?
I started buying my own properties with groups of investors back in the 80s.
Okay, so you have had a little bit of experience.
Yes. Yes.
So from all your experience of helping people do this, what would you say would be two of the biggest mistakes that Canadians are doing right now?
The first one I already mentioned was getting advice from an American lawyer without getting consultation from your Canadian lawyer, a tax accountant, you do not use an LLC.
Okay.
That, to me, is the biggest mistake people make from a legal...
But that's what everybody teaches you and tells you you should be using. So.
That's right, because you go to the American lawyer, that's what he'll tell you.
Right.
The next thing that happens is another big mistake. If you buy an investment property in the States, I'd say a house, that's what people are buying down in Arizona, in Florida, California, and renting them out. What happens is, without proper advice, people don't realize that there's a 30% withholding tax on the revenues coming back to Canada.
Yes.
That's on gross.
That's where you have to take the rent and you have to, 30% right off the top has to be held by a trust, by an agent.
Has to be sent in as withholding tax to the United States government, to the IRS.
Wow. That's a little bit of a haircut right off the bat. And I heard in some cases, if you don't have property management, your tenant can be is your agent, aren't they?
It could be.
That would be like putting the fox in charge of the hen house, wouldn't it?
But naturally, that's the law, but there you don't have to. It's the same thing as owning a property in Canada, that you can deduct all expenses and you just pay your income tax in the States without that 30% withholding tax. However, if you don't get proper advice, you will find that there's a 30% withholding tax when you structure your
investment. Are there structures that you can set up to forego that or to defer that to the end of the year?
If you do it properly, there is no withholding tax whatsoever on these types of properties. Zero
Perfect.
Withholding tax.
So that's what a good advice from a good qualified accountant and lawyer would do is you would set that up from the beginning that you have no withholding tax.
Exactly. But again, like you said, give me a mistake. That's a major mistake a lot of people will make without knowing that.
And that's just a very, very simple thing of just getting some good advice on the Canadian side of the border before you head down and make your purchase. But most people do it the opposite. They actually submit their offer before they ever get advice, don't they?
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, you're coming out to the August 27th all-day conference in Calgary for the Western Conference, and you're going to share with us the top 10 mistakes that Canadians have made, and that's just You've given us a couple right now, but I imagine you have a few more up your sleeve that are going to save people thousands of dollars and headache and grief and years off their life.
That is correct.
Okay. I put it out to a few people on our list about some questions that they might ask. Hopefully you'll be able to help us out. So right now, people that are buying properties in the States, most of them are most likely getting mortgages. Are most Canadians bringing their own money with them, or are they getting a mortgage from a U.S.-based bank?
If you're buying for personal use, you can get finance in the States with about a 30% down payment. So you can buy the personal use property with about 30% down, and they go to your credit information, and you can get a U.S. mortgage.
Okay.
However, the interest rate is higher on that than if you pledge your house in Toronto or your house in Canada as security for it and use your own cash, because the variable rate today is, what, under 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
And the rate on that mortgage, residential down there, would be over 4%. The benefit, though, is you still have, by doing the American side, you don't have, you haven't pledged your Canadian asset. You're actually using your American asset.
Okay. So most of the people are bringing their own financing with them.
Because they find it's much cheaper.
Right. Much cheaper and much easier. Now, I've also heard, and this is, could be, we're going to bust through a lot of myths here, is the Canadian government disallowing my interest payments on properties that I've bought in the States?
Not if they're for investment purposes.
Okay, that's what my response was, but someone once had told me that it's being disallowed of any properties that you're buying in the States.
Remember, what happens is you'll normally have a property manager, so a financial statement's prepared by him, your income expenses. You must file your American tax return, you pay your tax down there, and then you report your income in Canada as well, and you get a credit for the American tax against your Canadian taxes.
So is the U.S. system significantly different than the Canadian system of purchasing properties, like from a legal and conveyancing side and those kind of things?
Not at all. And in the States, everyone uses title insurance. In Canada, Ontario, you have to still use a lawyer because that's the rules we made as lawyers. So every transaction must have a legal opinion. However, that is not necessary in reality because you're using all the major, you're using title insurance, and title insurance gives you insurance for, and that's all transactions in Canada now, the major transactions all require title insurance, even though there's a lawyer. And let me just add one other little part, that when the lawyer gives his opinion to the title insurance company, they've given back a letter that says, we do not hold you responsible for your opinion.
Makes sense. Now,
so
what's this?
The same thing there. You'll have a title insurance company that will be acting on the closing, and you'll wire your funds to the title insurance company.
So most likely everything will be done through a Canadian lawyer's office. Can it represent me a lot on most of my transaction?
You could, or on the other hand, what you'd want is advice and guidance on the documents and how to take title. That's a major issue when you're
okay.
How to take title. So that's what you'd want advice on. And the title company down there would not know because you're Canadian. They won't give you the advice. They'll may give you some ideas, but you need to have that explained to you.
So that's why you'd find a good legal representation in the state that you're buying in that can help give you the advice that you require to the title company.
Correct. However, your Canadian lawyer, put it this way, I know which way, give you a guidance in that area.
Mm-hmm.
As to the different methods of taking title.
What about this, we hear the term escrow all the time. What does escrow mean and all that in the U.S. properties?
Escrow is just that, we have that also in Canada. The money goes into escrow, which means it's going in to be held subject to completion of a transaction. And if all
okay.
the terms are honored, then the funds are released from the escrow.
Oh, so it would be just as similar as if I put up my deposits and I put my deposits to my lawyer's trust account and the money sat there until the completion and the mortgage financing, everything came through and then the funds get transferred to the seller.
That's correct. That's really, when you give your money to the lawyer in trust, it's actually going in escrow.
Okay. We just don't use that term.
That's right. You don't use it that way. But basically, it's the same type of idea.
So you mentioned not to buy properties in the U.S. under your own personal name. What's the biggest challenges for that? If, let's say, I went down there, I didn't get educated, and I'm listening to this call now, and I've got this little pit in my stomach, and I bought a place down in Vegas, and I put it in my own personal name. What potentially can happen?
What happens is the United States, they have inheritance tax. So by putting property in your own name, one thing that comes up, if you die while you're owning the property, now you have to file probate in the state that you're in, which means you still have to in Canada as well with your estate in Canada. So there's no difference in that sense. But you must now file probate in Nevada, and there's fees for filing in probate. And now you have additional legal fees for doing that. The next thing is, in the states, they have inheritance tax. At the present time, it's not really an issue because the inheritance tax is based on your worldwide assets, and now there's an exemption on the first $3.5 million of your worldwide assets. So it's for a person that has more than that that it becomes an issue for paying inheritance tax. On the other hand, sometimes if you're just buying as an investment property and you're not investing millions of dollars, you may find that you're also not obviously planning to die, that if you're spending, say, $50,000 or $100,000, you may decide that you don't want to spend any additional funds to create the additional structures, such as an LLP, okay, and pay the extra legal fees for that type of structure.
Okay.
The same thing applies when you're buying a property for personal use. You may say that you don't want to spend the extra funds because you're not going to hold it forever. You plan to resell it. So, but again, you need proper legal advice and guidance on these issues so you can then finally make the decision.
It is part of the, you know, lots of structures and lots of different corporate entities in this. Is part of it have to do with being frightened of being sued, or maybe of a little bit of, and then this is a general statement about the U.S., about maybe a bit more of a litigious mindset. Is part of this, all these structures set up to protect yourself from lawsuits?
If you have that concern, then you would use a limited partnership to take title because it gives you all the flow-through benefits, or you might consider their new invention of the limited liability, limited partnership. So that you can solve that if that's a concern for you.
Okay. Now, how much does it typically cost to set up one of these structures?
On those types of structures, it could be a couple $1,000.
A couple thousand?
Oh, yeah.
Now, is that set up by a U.S. lawyer, or is that something my Canadian representation can help me with?
He cannot help it because it's American law. When you're creating these types of structures, it has to be done by an American lawyer.
So a couple thousand. Do I have to pay a annual service or annual accounting fee or something on that corporate structure?
Well, remember, if you obviously bought a property, you've mm-hmm. got income. That's why you did it. So you're filing your tax return every year. So,
but is there a yearly maintenance fee on that corporate entity?
It's a limited partnership. There's no annual fees. Same thing as in Canada. There's no annual fee. We create limited partnerships. Mm-hmm. There's no fee after you register them.
Oh, perfect.
Now, it could be in the difference. Now, again, you raised a good question. In certain states, there may be an annual fee. So you have to ask when you're incorporating whether or not there's going to be an annual fee for that structure.
Which states are you finding most of your transactions being completed in?
Florida and Arizona.
What, the places that have the sun?
You got it.
What, Canadians are trying to escape winter? Come on, that's just doesn't make sense.
Well, if you take a look at what's happening in Toronto, let me give you another benefit for buying down south, is that Ontario lawyers, I know, and the big law firms and big accounting firms are being forced to retire. Law firms at 65, these are the big law firms, and accounting firms, the big ones, at 62.
All
so
right.
Now what does the senior lawyer and accountant who's now retired, what's he going to do? Is he going to stay in Canada during the wintertime? And you know, this year in Toronto is miserable. So all these people will be looking to fly down south because they'll all be getting someplace down there. No one with that type of money, also they have the ability, will be staying here full time during the year.
So you're saying the golf in Toronto in January isn't very good?
No, it's not like Vancouver. You guys can still play out there. In Toronto, we can't.
I hear you. I hear you. Well, you know what? I have a personal situation. My parents, winter. They live in Saskatchewan, and they winter in Yuma, Arizona. And there is, from their small town, Saskatchewan, of maybe 2,000 people, there's probably 50 people from their hometown alone that stay in the same area of Yuma. So
now you see why in these southern places, notwithstanding the problems with their distressed property, what's happening is Canadians are buying for two purposes, for a vacation property, retirement. So they're buying a lot of properties down there. And the next part is for investment.
Mm-hmm.
And as all these people start retiring, buying second homes, and the Americans don't understand how powerful we are as Canadians, because we're buying a lot of properties down there. And the Americans actually don't think about us. They don't know who Canadians are.
Well, we're that 50 whatever state on the other side of another side of a couple lakes.
Yes. And so what's happening is there's a great influx of Canadians, and they don't really appreciate and understand that. They think that they got, to Canadians, this is one hell of a buying opportunity, especially with the dollar at par today. And so look what's happened. The Canadians are going in and buying both the investment properties and they're buying for personal use.
Well, that's why we're bringing you and Richard Dolan out to the Western Conference, which is on August the 27th. So just a reminder, everyone, we're interviewing David Franklin today, who's a top lawyer helping Canadians invest in the U.S., So, David, here's the situation. I'm a Canadian. I maybe bought a place in Palm Springs, and, it's for personal use, and maybe I want to rent it out to some family and friends and all that other kind of good stuff, and maybe rent it out to other Canadians. Do I have to claim income on these things, or do I have to file tax returns? Do I file a tax return in the U.S. and in Canada? What do I typically do if I'm not a big business person? I just want one property that I might want to rent out to some friends.
You're required, and because you're earning income in the United States, you have to file a tax return there. And then remember, we talked about withholding tax, so there's another issue with that. The other problem is when you're buying in different places, they have state taxes that if you rent for a short period of time, there are actually state taxes on that. Plus, you'll find that in certain projects and areas, unless you're buying a single-family home by itself, that there could be restrictions from the condominium corporation about renting as well.
So you're saying doing your full due diligence is very important when going down and buying in the States?
Oh, yes. In Florida, there's a rental tax of 12.5%. So if you're renting out constantly, it's up to 12.5% tax.
Okay. What about, Florida?
But not if you're renting for a full year. In other words, if you rent it out to a tenant for a full year, there's no tax. So you're renting out not as for residential, not for turnover, there is no tax.
Now, is there also a different tax structure for, like property tax structure for people that are local residents versus somebody who is a out of country owner?
When it comes to investment properties, the tax rates are the same for locals and foreigners. It makes no difference whatsoever.
Okay.
If it's for the people in Florida have what's called a homestead exemption, so they will pay, they have to live there and it's their own personal house. They get a reduced tax rate on their own personal house.
Yep, that would be no difference than, for example, in British Columbia, there's something called a grant system.
Yeah.
That if you're a homeowner, you get a certain grant level. If you're a homeowner and you're a senior, you get another grant level. And if you don't qualify for either, you have to pay a different property tax. So
it's got the same type of system. There we are right in Canada with the same type of an issue.
Yep. Okay, now a couple questions here. And in this one question, there's a lot of variables that potentially can be read into it. But what I'm trying to do is trying to make it as simple as possible. So let's say I had two exact same properties, one on north of the 49th parallel, one south. I bought them the exact same day and their exact same money and sold them both 5 years later for the exact same price. from a take-home net in my pocket, and we sold them for the same amount of money, do I take home the same amount between each of the properties, or would I take home a little less on one or the other property for tax-wise?
Basically the same, because what happens is the tax rates in the states, capital gains tax rate in the states is 15%.
Okay.
In Canada, you get the you're paying a much higher rate, because remember, it's taxed at half your tax rate, but it's still above the American rate. So the property in the states, but then when you bring that income back into Canada, you must file your tax return to Canada. You got to pay the difference, so the capital gains tax will be the same on the property in the states as in Canada.
Okay, so at the end of the day, it's my taxes calculated in Canada, and I get a credit for anything I've paid in the states.
That's
and then
correct.
I just pay a difference in Canada.
Correct.
If there's a difference.
One issue that could, there will be a small difference, however, because what we call capital cost allowance in Canada, they call depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is you are required to claim depreciation in the states against your property, regardless of whether you have income or not. Whereas in Canada, you do not have to claim capital cost allowance if you don't want to.
Okay.
You could be in a situation where in the United States you declare the you have to declare the depreciation. So when you sell, you have to recapture that. So you may not have been claiming, so you're, say, your capital cost allowance in Canada, but you'd be doing it in the States.
Okay, so you might be subject to a larger recapture in Canada than you would because you've claimed that in the States already.
Well, no, in the States, you'd have to have the, you pay
the
tax.
Or the other way around, yes.
The other way around, exactly. But you're not talking big amounts of money.
So good advice would be is to depreciate your properties in Canada because you're going to be doing it in the States anyways, right?
Well, except you may find that in Canada, for whatever reason, you may not want to claim it because you don't have to.
Okay.
So again, that's tax planning.
And having a good accountant on your team is imperative.
Yes.
Oh, good. Very good. So what about when I'm... So that's a little bit on the exit side. So I'm now holding the property, and I'm paying... In Canada, I'd be paying, you know, the business tax. You're paying your full marginal tax rate based upon your net income. Is that the same kind of structure as when I'm owning a property in the U.S. as well?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So I'd calculate my Canadian taxes owed, subtract the amount I've paid in American tax, and figure out if there's a plus or minus balance.
There's always be a plus because the tax rates in Canada are much higher.
Okay. And I guess that's why we have health care.
You got it. If they don't.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Now, I know yourself, as I mentioned before, you and Richard Dolan are on your way out to Calgary on August the 27th. Can you give us a little snapshot of what you're going to be presenting? I believe you have a full hour presentation. And can you give us a little snapshot of what you're going to be presenting during that hour?
Yes. Richard gives a presentation based on what happened to the U.S. Marketplace, the real estate market. And he goes through a complete analysis of what has happened and what is happening now and what looks like will be happening. He covers all those areas in a lot of depth.
Okay.
With a lot of charts, with a lot of information. And he is an excellent speaker.
Now, what about, what are you presenting there?
What I do is I cover the legal aspects and the, like you said, the 10 mistakes people make. Plus, I go into the legal aspects of these types of transactions. So on the legal part, I do all the due diligence, if you will, on all these transactions. I've been doing real estate for so many years, it's second nature to me.
Right. And I know one of the things that we are setting up for all the clients in advance is we're looking to have also a lunch and learn session where we're going to have yourself and Richard and Don Campbell and a couple of the keynotes during the lunch session. We're going to have a table where people can come by and ask some questions, and you'd be willing and open to answer a few sophisticated questions from our clients?
Most certainly.
We'll let you eat, though. Is that a fair deal?
That's exactly it.
And someone might even buy you lunch.
Thank you.
So what would be, before we sign off here, I wanted to keep this nice and concise to the point because I know how valuable your time is. What would you offer for RAIN members and people considering going south of the border? What would be two of your top tips that you would give to people?
Get proper advice legally and tax-wise. Those are the first things you want to do.
And would you even go as far as saying get advice early rather than late?
Most certainly, because this way, depending on how much you want to invest, you don't want to be surprised later to find out I've got this huge legal bill for what I'm trying to do. This way you know ahead of time, and also when you're buying, you want to make sure it goes into the right entity as well. So you want everything structured ahead of time. So
and would you also recommend everybody buying across the border put it into a corporate legal entity?
Depending on how much you're investing. So what happens is, like I said, if you're going to buy, say, investment property for $100,000, and you're not going to keep it for a long time, you know, and you're planning to be alive. In other words, there shouldn't be much problem. You might consider at that point in time, I may not want to spend the extra money at all. You know, what's the risk litigiously down the state? So you may say, I want to keep it in my own name. But again, you have to decide. On the other hand, there are protections you can use. So they also have what's called a C Corp down there. That's the same as our companies here in Canada.
Yeah.
However, when you make a lot of money in those, the tax rate goes up federally to 35%.
All right.
Yes.
Sometimes the more structures you have, the more protection you have, but also you have to pay for it.
Yes. The other thing I found in the States is there's a lot more information available about properties than there is in Canada.
So would you also suggest that people set up entity per property, or maybe group a few properties together per entity, or do you have a little bit of a rule of thumb that you would suggest?
Well, if you're using a limited liability, either a limited partnership or an LLP, then it'd be the same one over and over again.
Right.
Because you don't want to keep doing it, because if you have one created for all your properties, you're filing one tax return. If you set up different ones for each property, you'd be filing a lot of tax returns.
Perfect. I know that you're coming out on August 27th, and RAIN members and all anyone in attendance can come and ask you some questions. You're very approachable. Quick question: for how many properties do you know you've been? You said you've been doing this since the '80s. How many properties would you guess that you have transacted cross border?
Well, I was primarily in the investment side, so
yes.
We were doing just investment properties down there, basically apartment buildings.
Okay.
That's what we were doing down there.
Do you know approximately? Have you ever counted or put a dollar value or a number value?
It was in the millions of dollars as usual.
Yes.
For all these.
You lose track after time, don't you?
One thing I learned is their psyche is different than our psyche.
And how's that?
Well, what would happen is, maybe things will change now because of the meltdown, but Americans are more transient than Canadians. Like I started off by saying, I was born in Toronto, lived here all my life. Americans transfer from city to city quite often. So they're, or at least they used to before the meltdown. So they have a different attitude about ownership as well, because they're in town for, they may want to rent more because if you're switching jobs, they don't know how long they're going to be in the next place. They may prefer renting to owning.
Interesting. Yeah, I bet some of those stats have changed recently from what I've seen for, but I think they reverted. I saw some home ownership stats to about 5 years ago. It was a lot of people in the States were homeowning. Now that's reverted back to a lot more people renting, which is good for business if you're in the rental property business.
Exactly. That's the big difference. And what happened was the boom, if you will, this whole problem was caused because the government was encouraging everybody to buy properties through the mortgage system.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw before, their home ownership was probably less than ours. The reason is they're more transient. And one of the reasons was the guy says, look, if I buy a house and I've got to move in 1 year, I'm going to pay the legal fees to buy the property. And then when I resell, I got to pay the commissions. And I don't know if it's going to open value. So it's a lot of hassle for me to move on to my next job. So that was the mentality why they would not want to own as much as Canadians would. Right. They don't know. They could be there just for a year or two.
Yeah, and I know Richard's going to give us a full in-depth analysis of what has transpired so far. So
yes.
Looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to seeing your presentation as well, because I always get so much from listening to people who have been in the business and have transacted so many properties. And if you know what, if you're telling me these are the mistakes and here's how to avoid them and here's the solutions, I'm going to be writing down lots of notes. So
excellent.
Do you have any final thoughts for our clients or any for the RAIN members before we sign off?
Well, what we found in looking at the American market, there's a great opportunity. The way I look at the American market is that you can get a nice positive cash flow after management fees, and you're looking for the appreciation because you're buying way below replacement cost.
I think those are some good words to end off with, and I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to seeing each. This is something that all RAIN members need to come out to the August 27th Western Conference. This is going to be one of the most spectacular workshops that we've put on to date. And you know what, if you are interested in hearing more from David Franklin, you should come out to the August 27th Western Conference at the TELUS Convention Center in Calgary. RAIN members, remember you can attend this event for free as part of your membership. I know how busy you are, David, and for you to take time out of your schedule, I wanted to thank you on behalf of myself and on behalf of all the RAIN members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Russell. A pleasure.
Yes.
And I look forward to seeing everyone on August 27th.
Absolutely. So if you're not yet a RAIN member and you would like to attend this event, we have opened up a few guest seats for you. There's a special price that you can attend this. You can click on the more information or the register now link where you're listening to this interview, or you can always call our office at 1-888-824-7346. Get all the details and you can register. As mentioned, there are only a few spots that are reserved not for RAIN members. RAIN members and RAIN members guests get their first crack at all the seats. So once again, I wanted to thank you for listening to this latest interview with an expert. We've had David Franklin on the call today, an expert lawyer in Canada who's been helping Canadians buy properties in the States for close to 30 years now. It's Russell Westcott, the Vice President of RAIN, signing off. Looking forward to seeing you at the upcoming Western Canada Conference, or looking forward to seeing you at an upcoming event very soon. Bye for now.